Once again, I want to thank... I'm losing my voice, so... I want to thank the Herrensteins. We're not going to finish this inyan tonight. As I mentioned last time, it's going to take a few more times. So, once again, the Thurms have been gracious, Navarda and Avi, to open their home for us. Now, I was given the dates, but I think it's Varda here? I don't see. She's not here. So, it's going to be, I think, November 13th and the following Tuesday night. We'll send it out to everybody, but I just don't remember offhand. So we'll be able to, we'll continue. We really have a lot to talk about. Last week we were discussing the basics, and we're still going to, I hope you brought the photo stat that I gave you at the end last week for the Mori Nai. You get points off, Franny. It's all right. I would like you to look inside. If you don't have it with you, then share with somebody. We were sort of laying the spiritual groundwork for what we need to discuss in halacha and in custom, the whole subject of names, who names the child, the significance of names, and so on, adding names, Misha Beiruchs, all different subjects, everything that has to do with naming the boys, naming the girls, our own names, and so on. But we really have to understand a little bit more. We were talking last week a little bit about the significance of the name. And this piece from the Ma'orei Naim, let me just tell you what this is. If you don't have, then it's not long at all, so just try to pay attention. The Ma'orei Naim is one of the most important of the earliest Chassidus Svarim by the Rebbe Menachem Nochem from Chernobyl. I'm sure you heard of him. So it's going also on the parasha that we were talking about last week when we learned a piece from the Noam Elimelech. When we learned that amazing piece that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has determined that from the beginning of time that there are a certain amount of people who will be named Reuven, a certain to be named Shimon, and so on, and we spoke about that. So look inside the Ma'orei Naim, and then after this we'll be able to begin, this will take a few minutes, we'll be able to go into the subject of custom and halachas regarding the naming of children and to understand our names. Vayidabra Hashem Moshe b'midbar Sinai ve'echol l'chodesh le'emor su'us rosh kol adas b'nei Yisrael b'mispar shemos. Now you all know that I think it's well known that the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar goes through our names once again, the names of the tribes. Su'us as rosh kol adas b'nei Yisrael, we spoke about this b'mispar shemos, the names of the Jewish people, the names of the tribes and so on, and the leaders of the tribes. And how each Jew has to be named. Now what's interesting here is that Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu to lift up and count the Jewish people by their names, and it says, and tell the Jewish people, Lamer, to tell them. So the question is, that the Chernobyl asks, he says, Mahu Lamer, Shein Shayach Kan Lamer Yisrael. There is no commandment here that Moshe Rabbeinu is being told to tell the Jewish people. He's being told to conduct a census, and the Jews have to be counted by their names, by the names of their families, and so on. Lamer, in the Torah, when it says Lamer, it means, and tell them, generally it means what? And tell them to do the following, that there's a commandment. It was really only Moshe Rabbeinu's job to count the Jewish people. The Chernobyl explains that it says in the Navi, that Hashem takes out the stars and he counts them, and Hashem counts the Jewish people. Shashem is baruch motzi b'mispar tzvar Yisrael, that Hashem, the same way that Hashem counts the stars and he names them, so Hashem counts the Jewish people and names them, counts them and he refers to them by their names. But the tzaddikim say that it's brought down from the Svarim HaKadoshim that when Mashiach comes, each and every one of us is going to have the schus to pass before Mashiach, and he's going to call each and every one of us by our names. And it's not going to be, you know, Ethel. And not that there's anything wrong if any of you have that name. But it's not going to be by that name. So the EF Shashayach says, Shum Echad Mehem Chas V'Shalom. The meaning of that is that it can't be, God forbid, that any Jew should be missing from the cheshbon. Hashem has a cheshbon of how many Jews he has in the world. And that's what it means. That's this whole business of the census and Hashem telling Moshe Rabbeinu to count them and go over their names. It's something. It's something when you have that which is most precious and most valuable to you. So the counting and the naming means that this means something to me. It's important to me. That's what it means. V'ief sheshiach shum echad mehem chasu shom shemuchrachem liyos tamid shleimen. The Jewish people consist of a certain amount of neshamas, and Hashem wants that to be in each generation, and no one can be missing. K'may shomu chazal, ein hashchina shorei v'pachas mishnei alofim mishnei revavos miyisrael, where the Gemara says that the divine presence does not descend upon the Jewish people if there's God forbid less than 202,000. The more Jews, the better. But there can never be less than these Jews in the world. This is what's important for us. So Hashem counts the Jewish people by number, that there's a minimum amount of Jewish souls that must be in the world at each time. But the end of the pasuk there in the Navi says, Lekulam b'shem yikra, that Hashem calls each Jew by his name. The name of a person is his neshama. Sheshmo shel adam hu nishmaso, ki haosius shel shmo, because the letters of a Jew's name, heim shorsho, are the root of his soul, v'chiyuso, and the life force of that Jew. The letters of your name are the root of your soul, are contained in the letters of your name, and the chiyus, and the life force, uvehem hu ovid Hashem, and with the letters of one's name, one serves Hashem. Depending upon your name, each of those letters of your name, and exactly the exact configuration. If your name is Rachel, what that means, Reish, what it means, Ches, what it means, Lamed, and there are magnificent svarim and thousands of things written to explain what does the Reish mean, what is the Ches, what is the Lamed. With the letters, you serve Hashem, v'loimed, and you learn umispalo. Right, you daven. V'lachein therefore harishoyim einam yodim shemam rachamar litzlan. Therefore, the tzaddikim have taught and Chazal have said that when a person after 120 returns to Hashem, so he's asked his name, he's asked his Hebrew name, and the wicked cannot remember the Hebrew name. What does that mean? That they can't remember the Hebrew name. Why can't they remember the Hebrew name? So that's one of the reasons why we'll talk about the custom of saying at the end of Shemoneh Esrei the apostate with your name. Okay, but why can't a person remember a wicked person remember his Hebrew name? So he explains that Chernobyler. He remembers his name. Comes the next day, he doesn't remember that his name is Moshe. He says, his name is Moshe. When they ask him, what's your name? He says, Moshe. But the problem with Moshe is that Hashem equipped him in the most remarkable way with a mem, a shin, and a hey. Not only that, if he had two names, Moshe Yankov, and it was Ben, the son of David Hillel, whatever, the letters of his name were the most wondrous artillery equipment for him to reach greatness in learning and davening and mitzvahs. The letters of his name and what his name means, and the personality that's contained in the name of David or Hillel or Moshe or Yaakov and so on. And what that means. So that's what he's not going to remember. It doesn't mean that there's a lack of memory. It means that he lived 120 years being totally oblivious to the power and the energy and the life force that was contained within his own name. And that's tragic. That's what it means. Is constantly thinking about the letters of his name and how he was given that name, as we spoke about last week, by his parents. It was a certain divine inspiration that his parents had that Hashem sent into the parents' mouth, because that's what that individual was going to need to make it through this world and to become a tzaddik, the letters of that specific name. And the tzaddik is aware of that, and he serves Hashem with the letters of his name. He might not be thinking about his name all the time, but he has a very deep connection to those letters and what the name means. The Chernobylist says the great principle here is that there can, God forbid, be missing a Jew. And even, God forbid, the neshamas, the souls of the wicked that have fallen, those souls have fallen. It can't be that any Jewish soul is going to be utterly rejected forever. No Jew is going to be utterly rejected forever and ever. Every Jew has a tikkun. Every Jew has to come back to Hashem. Every single one. As it says in Sefer Shmuel, that Hashem is choshev machshavos. Look how much Hashem loves us. That Hashem is constantly thinking and planning and kivyachol devising ways to see to it shlo yidach menu nidach, that a Jew will not go away from him, that a Jew will return to him. She is galgal kama pa'amim, ad she yisuknu v'yis'alu. And even if it means coming back a number of times to this world till he'll find a tikkun, each one of us will come back until that tikkun is accomplished, till that repair has taken place. And we fulfill the meaning of our names. We have to fulfill the meaning of our names. V'hine Yisrael hayu az neshamas nefulin. The Jewish people at this point were souls that had fallen, had gone through a very, very difficult time. Ki kishamdu al Har Sinai pasku zuhamasan. Because on Har Sinai, when we came to Har Sinai, we were at the most exalted level. That the filth and the impurity of the snake of paradise of Gan Eden had been completely removed. We are on the most exalted level. We were like Adam before the sin. So what happened? Ukisha also esaegel chazru hazuama limekayma. For whatever reason, that's obviously not for now. As a result of worshipping the golden calf, we experienced this terrible drop from being in the highest possible point that a human being could reach. And then suddenly descending into the lowest depths of the sin of the golden calf. Therefore, the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, Leimer li Yisrael. So we come back to the original question of the Chernobyler. When Hashem was counting the Jewish people and naming them, he told Moshe Rabbeinu to count them by their names, right? Count them by their numbers and their names, and tell them. So the question that the Chernobyler asked at the beginning, tell them what? There's no mitzvah here. Moshe Rabbeinu has to take a census. What does it mean, Leimer? To tell what? So the Rebbe explains, Leimer li Yisrael, go and tell the Jews, Su es rosh kol das bnei Yisrael, shekula mechorachem lihinosei l'hasala. Su, lift up the Jewish people. That means that Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, go tell the Yidden, go tell my children that every one of them is going to come back to me. Su, lift them up, give them a boost. Lift them up, tell them that each and every Jew is going to come back to me. No matter what's gone wrong, no matter what's happened, because they were feeling very, very down. Afshanaflu, even those who have fallen terribly. Sue, go tell them that they're counted, that they count. I'm still counting them and I'm counting on them. And I still remember their names, and I'm calling them by their names. Lemishbechosam lishorsham, they're by their root. I know who they really are, even though they've fallen. I know who they really are. Go tell them. Hashem's telling Moshe Rabbeinu, tell them that I know who they really are. And tell them who they really are. Leveit avosam. By their fathers' homes, by their families, by the house of the Ovis. Kenachnu chelik mihaovis. Go tell them who their ancestors were. Go tell them what kind of ancestry, what great people they come from. Utsvichim lahagil lemaisei ovis. And that they one day, they have to begin to work to return to that level of their ancestors. B'mispar shemos, the names. Kenal, shashem hu asharish. That they have to return to the purpose of their names. To come back to who they really are. And they can. And go tell them that no matter what they've done wrong, they have Jewish names. And the Torah goes on to name them by their Jewish names. And therefore they can return to the root of their soul as long as they have their Jewish names. And that's why it says, Kol Zohar LeGulgulosam. Kol Zohar LeGulgulosam means, as we spoke about last week from the Rabbi Elimelech, LeGulgulosam literally means to count them by a head count. But here, the Rebbe says also, even if they have to come back, LeGulgulosam. Even if they have to come back a number of gilgulim, a number of lifetimes, they're going to come back. Ad she yisuknu, until they will be repaired. The lomel hem lezgalgal atov she yisaknu atzma pam harishim. Therefore, go tell them, why do you want to come back? Why do you want to come back with gilgulim? It's hard to come back to this world. Tell them that they can lift up themselves right now. They have Jewish names. They have Jewish souls. This is the root of who they are, and therefore it's unnecessary to go through gilgulim. Why do you want to go through all kinds of sorrows and to come back to the world again? Tell them that they could start again now. They could return to their source. Now, having just a basic introduction, let's begin now to talk about some of the points in choosing a name and who has the choice of naming. There are many, many machloikism that have come about as a result, differences and disputes in families that are very uncomfortable. It's a time of a great simcha when a Jewish child comes into the world. And often I've seen that simcha spoiled by differences between husbands and wives or in-laws and so on, as far as the name is concerned. Let's go in order. Number one, many Svarim tell us, I mentioned this last week, that it's preferable that when one considers naming a child, it's not usual to discuss this before, but one can discuss it even before, but to speak to a tzaddik or to one's rebbe regarding the choice of a name. That doesn't mean ask him for a name, but it means that you have a few names that you're considering, and it's brought down already. It's brought down from the in the earlier svarim that one should try to speak to an Adam Gadol, to a great person, about a specific name, and how the names work out with that family and with that child. We even are told that the Divrei Chaim, the sons thereof. Now this is something that nowadays I don't think anybody can get away with, even the greatest tzaddik. But in his time, the sons thereof, very often, when he would be the tzaddik, they would always honor him with tzaddikos, to be the tzaddik by a bris. He was a great tzaddik. That when it came time for the naming of the child, that the sons thereof went into a state of dveikus, of intense attachment to Hashem, and he would scream out the name of the child, even though it was somebody else's child. He would give the name, and everybody accepted that. As I said, nowadays, that's not something that I think anybody can get away with. Al pi rov. Nevertheless, this is not the prevalent opinion that the tzaddik should give the name, but just to speak to the tzaddik about giving the name. Since we learned last week that there is a unique level of divine inspiration of Ruach HaKadosh that the parents have in naming the child, and that means it's the parents' responsibility. To the last minute, it's the father's responsibility to say the name that he discussed with his wife, the husband and wife discussed. As a matter of fact, by the Lubavitcher Rebbe, I don't know if I mentioned this last week, by the Lubavitcher Rebbe, as many thousands, if not tens and hundreds of thousands of times that parents came to ask him what they should name the child, the Lubavitcher Rebbe refused to even suggest the name, insisting that it has to be something which is only from the parents, and nobody else is allowed to interfere. Nobody else, he said, is allowed to interfere. Not in-laws, not relatives, no one. Only the parents, the husband and wife, have to decide the name, because we see from the sources that Ruach HaKodesh is reserved for the parents alone and not for anybody else. Now, giving the name. Whose schus is it to give the name? What's the order? How does this work? There are three general approaches. We're going to talk about a son and a daughter, because there are different customs when it comes to naming the son and naming a daughter. We're talking about the first child. We'll begin with the first child. Whether it's a son or it's a daughter. Now we're talking about three different views about naming the firstborn son. A firstborn son. It's brought down in the Leket Yosha in the name of the Trumas Hadeshen, which is a very important source of Ashkenazic custom. It's brought down that the meaning of the Kehilos, that the custom of the communities, the Jewish communities apparently in Germany and Austria, that their custom in Czechoslovakia, that whole area, that their custom was that the father has the schus to give the name. The father has the right and the privilege to name the first son. Then the mother has the right to name the second, and it's choizer, and it goes back and forth in that order. One, it goes father, mother, and so on. This minig is already brought down in the early Rishonim. It's found in the Daz Zekeinim from the Balei HaTosfos in Parshas VaYishlach. The Daz Zekeinim from the Balei HaTosfos say this in VaYishlach. This is also found in the writings of the Radak. So it has early sources in the Rishonim that the first child, the first boy, the father has the schus for the name, and then the mother, and it goes back and forth. The second view is, there's an opinion that holds that when it comes to the naming of the son, the schus always belongs to the father, and only if there's, God forbid, the father is no longer there, so then the schus is the mother's, not anyone else, the mother then. But according to this view, The father is the one that always has the schus to name the first son. The third view, which is the one that is accepted lemaisa among Ashkenazic Jews, is that the schus of the naming of the first boy belongs to the mother. It belongs to the mother. The naming of the first son belongs to the mother. What is the reason for this? There are a number of reasons. No, the first, very simple. Shehi sovla tsar leida. She worked harder to have the kid. She suffered. She went through pain and agony to deliver the child. And therefore, it is only right and fair that she had the schus to name the bechor. And this is found in the writings of the Rebbe Reb Chazkele from Shinova. The Shinova was the son of the Devi Chaim, and the writings of the Chassam Sofer and many others. Also, the poskim say another very interesting reason why is it that the custom is that the mother names the firstborn child. And the explanation is that since the woman generally leaves her parents' home, she is very deeply, the girls are very deeply connected to their families, and the Torah says what happens is that upon marriage, she then becomes devoted to her husband, and on some level she becomes detached or separated from her past. Therefore, the schus of naming a child, the firstborn son, goes to the woman to reconnect her to her past, to be able to name after her grandfather or father, since she is the one who suffers most from the detachment from her past and her family. So for those who feel that, who have thought, God forbid, that halacha is not sensitive, this is a very edel nakuda. You hear this is a very sensitive point that's made by the tzaddikim, that a woman feels more lost without her family and more detached, having to leave her family. And a way of connecting again is by naming the firstborn son. So therefore the Svarim explain that she is the one who has that right. This is found in the writings of the Chida. The Chida tells us a fascinating thing. The Chida wrote that Gershom, the son of Moshe, right, Moshe Rabbeinu's first son, Gershom, that he was named by Tzipora, by his mother. Now Moshe Rabbeinu was, a very fine Talmud Chacham, and he knew all the secrets of the universe. But the firstborn son was given, the name was given by Tzipora, and the Chida says that is what's hinted at in the pasuk where it says, when the name was given, it says, Asher Shem Ha'echad Gershom. Asher Shem Ha'echad, the name of the first one was Gershom. The first three letters, Asher is an Aleph, Shem is a Shin, Ha'echad is a Hey, spells Isha, the woman. Asher Shem Ha'echad is Isha, and Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who gave the second name, which is Eliezer. But the first name was given by Tzipora, by the Isha. This is brought down in the Svarim as a prevalent custom among Ashkenazim. Among the Svarim, there are, depending upon the community, I'm not going to go into it because it's a little bit complicated, because the Svarim, Syrians, Persians, Iraqis, and so on, there are a number of different customs. But this is the prevalent custom among the Ashkenazim, that the woman has the right to give the firstborn son his name. There's an interesting question that was asked of Rav Moshe Feinstein. In the third volume, in this third volume in Yerideya, there was a case of a certain woman who had a boy, and unfortunately, after a few days, the baby died. Not after birth. And now, eventually, thank God, they had another child, and she should have the right to name this child. I mean, she says, the fact that I named the first boy, that he died right after the bris. So she had a taina with her husband. The husband felt the custom among Ashkenazim is that the second one goes to me. She said, I didn't really have enough from the first name, that the baby died so shortly after the bris. So Ramosha paskind that the woman is correct and that she has the schus to give that name as well. Now, how long would that be in effect? It's not clear. But it seems that Rav Moshe held that if the child is not well and didn't live beyond the earlier years, whatever that means exactly, that the schus would return to the wife. Now, this is all as far as the son is concerned. As far as the birth of a daughter is concerned, the minig is that a daughter, the firstborn daughter, is named by the father. that the daughter is named by the father. Rashi, if you look in Rashi, in the Chumash, we're coming soon to these parashiyas. Ela b'nei Leah, it says, Ela b'nei Leah, when it's talking about the boys, it says, these are the sons of Leah, right? So the boys are named, we see the boys go back to Leah. Vezdina Bito, and Dina, his daughter. Ela b'nei Leah, Vezdina Bito. So the tzaddikim learn from here that we see that the zecharim, the males, are connected to the mothers. To the mothers. And Vezdina Bito, the daughter Dina, went back to the father. So the tzaddikim understood from here that the daughter is named by the father, the first daughter. And again, then it switches back and forth. And again, one also has to speak to a Rav or Talmud Chacham if there are complications later up, because there might be some special circumstances. There are, and we're going to talk about this more later on, such as there was a relative that died recently. If there was a relative that died recently, that a grandparent or something, so it might not be in the right Seder, it might not be in the right order. Can we make an exception? All of this, whenever there's Mechila, it's fine. You understand? In other words, if one gives in to the other and it's okay with the other, you're allowed to give up your schus. You can be nice about it and give up your schus. You can give up your right to that name if there are extenuating circumstances. If a relative passed away, or there's something special, or somebody is a Rebbe that you want to give a name, that the husband wants to give a name. I mean, these are things that the husband and wife can work out between them. What we've been talking about now is that one can say, I demand this privilege. And according to the custom, the one who is opposing that custom would not be able to give the name. Any rov would say you cannot go against the custom. However, certainly one can be marchal, and it's, in many cases that's the only way. Depending upon the nature of the couples, that's sometimes the only way to have shalom. But there is a schus, and we were just talking about the schus, but it doesn't have to be. The couples can be marchal. Now here, let me just mention, there was some concern about this. I'm going to mention there's something here that we have to keep in mind, and I'm going to come back to this a few times, that due to the seriousness of and the importance of the name, that the mazel of that child is very much connected to his name. It says in the Gemara, v'shema kagorim, that means that the name of a child brings about a certain mazel in the child's life, and is mashpia, and that in turn has an effect, an influence upon the child and the grandchildren, great-grandchildren, till the end of time. Therefore, it's brought down in the Sefer Chassidim and others. Sefer Chassidim is not a Chassidish Sefer, it's from Rabbi Yehuda Chassid, it's a very, very early Rishon. It's brought down from the Rishonim, that therefore, if you're naming after an individual, and I know some of you were concerned about this last week, and it's going to get you a little bit worried now as well, but I'm going to explain. Just bear with me for a minute. If you're naming after a specific person, the Rishonim said that you should look into the life of that person, his actions, his way, his midos, particularly his midos. What was the personality of that individual? The Sefer Chassidim wrote that the nature of the person after whom the child is named is going to have a tremendous impact upon that child. And the Sefer Chassidim brought the pasuk, V'yikar b'hem shmi v'shem avosai, right? V'yikar b'hem shmi v'shem avosai, that Yaakovinu the bracha, that the child will be called by my name and the name of my fathers and my ancestors. And it says in Yeshayo, Hikashu ha-shamayim ha-chadashim v'ha-aretz ha-chadosha, Asherani Oseh Omdim Lefanai. Hashem says that just as I created a new heavens and earth, and they stand in my presence, Nuhum Hashem, Kein Yamod Zarachem Vishimchem, so will your descendants and will your names forever be before me, the names of the Jewish people. So the Sefer Chassidim said that the length of years that a child lives and what kind of a life that child has is very deeply connected to the child's name, and to the person after whom he or she was named. That the same way Hashem said that as the heavens and the earth will continue to exist and stand before me, so will you, your children, Zarachem v'Shimchem, and your names. So the Sefer Chassidim says that the length of years and the type of life that one has is very much dependent and very much connected to the name. Therefore, the Ma'avar Yavak and other important sources tell us that if the person that if there was a person who was known, not so much, it's not so much a question of whether the person was necessarily, let's say the person didn't know so much halacha, but the point is whether the person had was God forbid, somebody who was cruel or was stingy, was a person that was nasty, had shlechta midas, had midas that were unpleasant, somebody that was, God forbid, abusive to a wife or to children or to a husband or children, somebody that was a nasty or abusive person, the Svarim warn us that this could have a terror by naming the child after that person. It could have a very adverse effect upon the child. And the Sifrei Kabbalah says something even more frightening, and I'm only telling this to you that you should realize the significance and the importance in the future, but I'll also calm you down if this is something that upsets you. That is brought down in the Sifrei Kabbalah that on some level the person after whom the child is named reappears in the life of that child, that's Mizgagal, that the neshama, the soul of the deceased, attaches itself to the soul of that child, attaches itself to that child, and therefore if that person who the child is named after was guilty of certain averis for which he's chayiv to be killed, that could shorten the length of years. In other words, of the child, that individual was somebody who was desecrating Shabbos, or who was, let's say, converted to a chas v'shalom or things like that. So he was chayiv, he was obligated, skila, sreifa, different penalties and punishments by the Beis Din. So the Kabbalists from tell us that could have such an impact upon the child that, God forbid, a child could die prematurely as a result of taking on that neshama that is obligated to go through certain suffering or certain punishments. Now, that's something which is obviously very, very unnerving and upsetting to many people. As I mentioned last week, particularly Balei Tshuva, for whom many of their parents, or even grandparents, were not at all observant. So, first of all, let me just repeat this, that primarily we're dealing here with people who had difficult midas, not people who didn't know. If somebody didn't know, they weren't observant, they might have been wonderful people, they just didn't go to yeshiva, they didn't learn, it's not their fault. So that's not something we're talking about. Basically, we're talking about somebody who is guilty of sins. You see, a Jew is not a Jew also if he didn't know about Shabbos or about Kashrus, so then he's not liable to the kind of punishments that we find in the Torah. So that child's not affected by a person of that type who is, let's say, not keeping Shabbos because they didn't know. They didn't know. Well, they heard of Shabbos, but it wasn't something that they learned really and they understood and so on. However, when it comes to Midas, when it comes to the type of person, that's something that you really have to be very, very careful with, because that could have, there are many such stories that can have a terrible influence upon a child. Here too, however, there's a saving grace. And I mentioned this to somebody last week who was upset about the situation like this, where there was a relative after whom, you know, you had no choice. How could I not name the child? And if this, whatever, a grandparent, and the grandfather wasn't, like, you know, such a great guy. The mice, you know. So the Svarim tell us that that you should have in mind when you name the child after that person, let's say the name is Avram. So you should think about Avram Avinu, right? You should think about Avram Avinu. You should have that, even though no one at the Bris knows that. And, you know, everybody's quelling, oh, the Zaydi Avram, and you think, Avram Avinu, right? or about a tzaddik that was named, you know, a tzaddik that was named Avram, that you knew, or a fine Jew that left the world whose name was Avram, right? You could think of Rav Pam or somebody. But you have that name of Avram in mind, that it should connect to somebody else. And even if you didn't know this, and the child was named after such a person, still the Svarim say that even later on, you should concentrate and try to have this in mind when you call the child by his name, even as he or she grows up, to think about it, to focus on the name of a tzaddik who has that name. That's why the traditional names are obviously easier to deal with. You can have a hard time finding, like, you know, Kfir, or whatever, some name like, you know, they think of Daron. These are hard names, you know, to connect to. It's generally going to be after that one individual. But as far as the traditional names, there are many tzaddikim that have those names, or righteous and holy women. So if there's a grandmother whose name was was Chana. So there's no shortage, thank God, of tzedekanias, of great and righteous women whose names were Chana. And usually in the family, the grandmother was also named after Chana. And you look back into the life of the Chana after whom she was named. And most likely it was a very fine and righteous person. So so there's a way to correct the situation, but it requires using the Hebrew name of the child, even if you haven't been doing that, calling the child by the name, and when you call the child by the name, to literally focus on the good midos and the wonderful personality and holiness of earlier tzaddikim who had that name. And it could be after the others, if the name is Reuven, after the Shvatim, and so on. So it's never too late, God forbid, with this. Yes? Sure, we're going to talk about that. It's a wonderful thing to name after tzaddikim. It's a very powerful thing. Now, how that works out with family and tzaddikim, we're going to talk about probably next time. When, let's say, one wants a family member, a name from a family member, and the other wants the name, this will often happen, that the wife wants a relative to have the name. And the husband was close to his rabbi. And the rabbi is no longer alive, and he wants the rabbi's name for the child. So this is something which has caused conflict. We're going to talk about naming after tzaddikim. Naming after tzaddikim, many hold that it's the most powerful thing to give, a name after tzaddik, more than any other name. Others disagree and say that first comes the family. We're going to talk about that. You know that, so I have one of my cousins in Williamsburg was married this week. His name is Yoeli. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, if you say Yoeli in Williamsburg in school, so Yoeli, you know, you have to use different nicknames and last names because, or if you say in Crown Heights, Mendel, or Menachem Mendel, so, you know, you can have 25 adorable little faces. Look up, you know, Menachem Mendel is every kid is Menachem Mendel. You know, once in a while there'd be a Dov Bear, a Shalom Bear, but, you know, pretty much, you know, it's Menachem Mendel all around. So, those children that are named after these tzaddikim, they have a tremendous schus. And there are a lot of very holy little Yoelis running around, little Mendel is running around. So it's a very special thing. And we're going to spend a whole part of our discussion, Mitzvah Hashem, regarding this Indian of naming after tzaddikim or tzadkanias. Very, very powerful, very, very energizing for a child, very, very positive beginning for a child is to be named after a tzaddik. And you know what? You could do both. It could be that you could have both in mind. You know, a parent or a grandparent who was a wonderful person, have that in mind, and also have the name of a tzaddik who had that name. And it certainly is wonderful. And one doesn't exclude the other. Let me just mention to you that there are a list of certain names. I'm going to give you some now. That before we go on to the next actual halachic subject, which is Hebrew names as opposed to English names, there are some names that we find from the Rishonim, the Mukabalim, that have particular kaiches, that have particular type of energy. I'm going to go through some of them now, and then at the end, at the very, very end, at our last discussion, maybe I'll go through a whole bunch of other names. Or you could even, you know, ask me, we could talk about some of the names. But there are some names that the Mukabalim are very, very strong about, that these names have certain effects. The name Avraham has a strong impact on a child being generous and giving. I don't have to explain that, right? That's Avraham Avinu is chesed. This is brought down by the Beis Yosef in the Magen Meisharim that was revealed to him by an angel. That when a boy is named Avraham, the boy is strongly inclined to being generous and good-natured. The name Yosef, that person has a strong netiyah towards being more pure in the area of sexual relationships, to being pure, and to being strong in resisting temptation. Also, he has the ability to earn a great deal of parnasa and to feed and to sustain many Jews and to help many people out. Right? Again, we're going to see this. Reb Tzadok HaKohen explains. Let me just make something very clear before we go on with any of these names. Reb Tzadok wrote the following. Reb Tzadok wrote, not every Yosef came out to be a Yosef HaTzadik. And not every Shimon came out to be a great tzaddik like Shimon, with the nature of Shimon, the one that we know in the Torah. Shimon had a certain nature. Obviously, the tribes, if one of the boys has a name of one of the tribes, or there's a girl with the name of Dina, you obviously have to study very, very deeply all the Torah on that Shevet. And my son, Asher Zelig, that was my great grandfather. So, you know, I don't think there's anything around that I haven't read on the subject of Asher. You know, in the Indian of the name of Usher, the letters, what they mean, and who he was, and Shevet Usher. And that's something that certainly one was to study. But Reb Tzadok writes, Rav Tzadok writes, he says, go out and see. Kama Yosef Ikebashuki. He says, there are many Yosefs running around in the marketplace. Sheinim Gidurim Barayis, that they're not so careful when it comes to women. There are a lot of Yosefs that are not behaving. Ki Yosef Atzadi. So he says, V'afo Pishim Mekol Mokum Vadai Shema Gorim. He says, nevertheless, the Kohen, Rav Tzadok says, you should know that the name does have an impact. And he says, Lios Lo Shaychus Malish Shereshimo. And that child, even though right now, that young man, or that adult, even though he's a Yosef that's misbehaving, he has the ability to become a very great tzaddik in that area. And we see this, and that's part of the root of his soul. The fact that he's not living up to his name doesn't mean that he doesn't have the greater ability to become holy in that. In general, Reb Tzadok says this in a number of places, that area in your life where you have the greatest Yetzirah is Davka, a sign that there you can become great. We tend to think just the opposite. Generally, most of us, when we have a certain weakness, we say, all right, let me try something else. And this, I'm not going to be good, right? So let's say when it comes to Lashon Hara. So all right, I'm not doing well with Lashon Hara. I tried, I went to a couple of these things. I made a few emergency calls to the Chofetz Chaim Heritage or something. And I've done all, I did a Lashon Hara for the day, you know, lessons for the day. I did all that stuff. And I still find like I'm just, it's not going. So the nature of a person is to think, I guess, you know, I better move on to something else. Some other midah to work on, because there's some other din, halacha, because Lashon Hara is not working out. So Reb Tzadok says it's just the opposite. The davka where you have the greatest struggle in life is the siman that that's where you could be greatest. And you should know that Yosef's greatest struggle was davka in this area of being pure. That was his greatest struggle. And so it was with Avraham Avinu, and so it was with Moshe Rabbeinu, with each of the tzaddikim. They perfected themselves. Davka, they brought themselves out from the extreme opposite. What is extremely, from the extreme opposite, one knows how great you can become. So Reb Tzadok says that even though you see Yosefs that are not tzaddikim, that doesn't mean that. He certainly has unbelievable kaychus, he just has to use his free choice. But once he does, he could tap into the amazing power of the name Yosef, which is tremendous power. And the same thing when it comes to Parnosa. So you can say, you're thinking, Yosef's Parnosa. Yeah, I know Yosef that, you know, guy doesn't go to work, can't get a job. That's not a raya. Reb Tzadok says that the name Yosef, which means to add, everything about Yosef, and that Yosef sustained the whole world he was taking care of. Everybody was starving, and Yosef Atzadik was the one that was responsible for food distribution. He was the mashbir. He sustained the whole world. So the name Yosef has an unbelievable kayach of parnasa and of providing and of sustaining, also spiritually, helping someone and providing for a person. It's a very, very nurturing name, Yosef. Very, very nurturing name. Yehuda. Oh, I'm sorry.
When we're talking about names, are we talking about what is named on the birth certificate, or what if we call them something else?
Like, let's say a birth certificate is meaningless piece
not
of paper.
Birth, let's say we have a Hebrew name. Let's say Yosef Avram, and we call them Yosef. Mm-hmm. Do we get the trait of Avram also, or is it
when you have two names? Okay, we're going to talk about combinations afterwards. Mm-hmm. That's something which in the earlier days they didn't do, as you know. That's something that's developed later on to combine two names. Yeah, there is an advantage to combining two names as long as it's a good combination. Sometimes they're not good combinations. And that's why it's important to speak to someone and ask about a combination. There, it could be sometimes you could have a name like Lamarshal. You give a name David Shaul. So you know that in this world there was a difficulty there. So there are certain, and there are many, many such instances of people who try to bring together two names and the combination is not a healthy one. And the tzaddik would look at that and say right away that both names are beautiful but they don't belong together. One is better not to inquire after the fact, right? But that doesn't mean, God forbid, that the child is doomed, chas v'chalila. And it just means, again, it's an additional help, but if they're two kosher Jewish names, then it's not something that's going to hurt the child. It only means that it might be in some way that there'll be some conflict and difficulties, but it doesn't mean that the child is going to chas v'shalom. They're Jewish names, and Jewish names are holy. So even if it is David Shaul or Shaul David, It's not something that is going to chalila disable the child, but it could mean that he's going to have to go through some difficulties. Remember that both of those were great tzaddikim, and this person has tremendous potential. It just means it's not going to be easy, right? Because there's a little bit of a hit nakshut, there's a clash. So it is with many names. But we're going to talk about the double names and how that affects the child afterwards.
When you talk about double names, is it also the double, like the hash, is like the Hebrew?
No, that's not considered two names. The Yiddish,
name.
Yeah.
The Yiddish, Menachem Mendel, the Yiddish.
Yeah, yeah, those bears, they've wolf, the hash. Those are really one name. It's a kinu, it's a Yiddish nickname. We'll talk about the Yiddish names also. the name Yehuda. Yehuda, the Arizal said that every Jewish boy who has the name Yehuda has the most powerful potential
to overcome any obstacle that's placed in his path.
Girls' names, there are certain names that we're told that they're particularly mesugal, they have the power to grant life, long years. Since traditionally, thank God with modern medicine, more women are able to survive childbirth and to live longer lives. But as you know, throughout history, a woman who went through delivering a child in the old days, it was like a 50-50 chance of of dying. It was unbelievable. So there are certain names that the Arizal said are mesugal for a woman being healthy and well and living a long life. The name Chaya, Chava, and Chana. These names, again, I'm not going to go into explanations right now, but these names, if there's a woman who again, it helps as far as if there's a history in the family, Chas v'Chalila, of grandmothers, great-grandmothers dying prematurely. The name Chaya, Chana, Chava, these are all names that are filled with years and with long life and with health. Not to say that other names are not good, but these are very powerful names of health and long life. The Arizal, as you know, and I've mentioned this before in Shul a number of times, the Arizal strongly urged women and parents to choose for the daughters names that have a hay in them, that have a hay. The letter hay for a woman is extremely powerful for two things, Yirat Shemayim, to be God-fearing, and to be healthy and live a long life. So if you're Rachel, don't start getting nervous. My name is Rachel, it doesn't have a hay. Rachel was a big tzaddikus, and she did very well. But generally speaking, most women's names do have a hay. And as I mentioned last year, one shiur, that's why the Arizal said that Rachel's shivcha, her maidservant, the name was Bilha, with two hays. Since Rachel didn't have a hay in her name, and hay is very much connected also to having more children. That's a very, very deep concept in the Sifrei Kabbalah. The letter hay, that's why there is a custom that from the Mekubalim that a woman who has difficulty having children, who hasn't been able to have a child, that the Mekubalim would give that woman an iron necklace of the letter hay. If you go to the 47th Street, and you go to some Jew and you say, we need a hay, they know what it's about. They all have them. A letter hay made from iron. The reason that it was made from metal, from iron, is because Barzel, which is iron in Hebrew, stands for Bilha, Rachel, Zilpa, and Leah. So that's why the custom is that Arizal said it should be Davka, the letter hay, and it should be Barzel. The word hay in Hebrew means when Yosef at Tzaddik instructed to provide the family with grain, the word in the Hebrew in the pasuk was hey lachem zara. Here is the grain. Here. The word in Hebrew, hey aleph, hey, means behold. Here it is. This is one of the reasons why the Arizal said it helps having a child. Again, behold, here it is means that the letter hey is very powerful for bringing something into reality. You also know that Hashem created Olam Haba with the letter Yud and Olam Hazeh with the letter Hey. Right? Ki b'ka Hashem sur olamim. Ki b'yud Hey. Hashem formed the universe with the letters Yud Hey of His holy name. The Yud is connected to spirituality, to the hidden realm of Olam Haba, the world to come. And the Hey is this world. The last Hey of Hashem's name is the letter of creation of this world. Hey lachem. Behold. Here it is. Therefore, the letter hey in a woman's name is very much connected to bringing life into this world and to living in this world. The letter hey for many, many, many reasons. Years ago, before the shul started, I used to give a shiur in Far Rockaway. Well, actually, I gave it in Cedarhurst on the Isis, on the Hebrew, on the Olive Bays. I gave it for 2 years, and I was just up to hey. We did till hey, and I was talking about each one of the letters of the Olive Bays. And I think there must be some tapes around. I don't have them, but I know that there are people that tell me that they listen to these tapes. Somebody taped them. But the letter hey, that time I spoke for around 3 months just on the meaning of hey and how it relates to women. The Arizal was very, very emphatic about trying to have a hey in girls' names, if you can. If not, then at least it should be one of the accepted names of tzadkonis. That's why I do become personally, I do get nervous about choosing girls' names that are new and they don't even have a hey. At least if it's Ariella, it has a hey in it, even though that's not a traditional name. At least it has a hey in it. But then if someone's going to take a name that doesn't have a hey and use it for a girl, so it's not a wise decision to make. At least for that, at least there should be a second name that does have a hey or that's more traditional. So one has to be careful to try to use as much as possible the traditional names, or at least if you're going to be more creative and you like the Ilanas or the Arielas or the Danielas, so, and I know a lot of lovely girls with those names, you should try to, you have noticed that they all have hays in them, and there's a reason for that. There's the Svardim, many of the names that Ashkenazim did not give, Svardim did give, and therefore they were great Satkonias that were named. Just that if you dig up, if you speak to Svardim, you'll find, like I mentioned last week, Zilpa is a name, Bilha. I have two students with the name Bilha. I don't think you know any Ashkenazim with the name Bilha, do you? You do? Ashkenazim?
Oh.
Svardisha, there are the name Bilha you have. I have a number of students with the name Bilha and Zilpa. But Ashkenazim, it's not usual. It's safer to take a name that the Svardim used, that by Ashkenazim is unconventional, than something that you might have read and you think it's neat, you know, like it's just a nice name. Or it's something that's interesting. It's better to name after a name that's been used by holy Jews, not to come up with something new. And we're going to talk about that much more. That and if it is something new, it really for a girl, if possible, there should be a hey at least in one of the names, which most girls' names have a hey anyway, right? Most women's names have a hey. It's also brought down in the Zohar Kaddish. It's brought down in the Zohar that a name that has the letter Vav in it, that person has greater potential for simcha, for joy, and also for life, for long life. That was the letter that was given to Cain. Vayosem Hashem leKain os. When Cain was afraid of being killed, Hashem gave him a letter on his forehead, and according to the Zohar, that was the letter Vav that was given to him. Vav means to connect. Obviously, this is related to Simcha, because the Vav that connects gives the person a feeling of finding himself, herself, having a place in this world, connecting to other people, connecting to Hashem. Any name with the letter Vav is a person who can very, very comfortably connect, and as a result of that, feel a deep Simcha. The letter Vav is a very Simchadik letter, very Simchadik letter in the name. Yeah, boys and girls. If there's a letter Vav, very powerful for Simcha. Also, the Arizal said for Vatronis, that means a person who will give in. Doesn't have to be his wife. He's Michael. Like a person with a letter Vav, Vav means also, right? In Hebrew, Zev, Vizev, this and that. So it's okay, this is also good. Right? This is also okay. Vav means you too. So the Svarim say that a person with a letter Vav in the name has a greater strength of compromising, of giving in, and is more easygoing. The Vav is a letter that helps the person in that way. Again, I'm just giving some very famous things that are found in the Arizal and in the Zohar. There are thousands and thousands of other comments that are made by the Arizal, thousands, regarding different names and the use of names and what different names and the letters of different names mean. We'll just begin now. I don't know if maybe I shouldn't give this out because I'm afraid you won't come back with it next time, so I'll give it out next time. There's a very, very complicated subject. It's actually one that's discussed in the poskim. The use of secular names. Now, this is a touchy subject, obviously, because many of us grew up. When I was a kid in school, the teachers, my parents always called me by my Jewish name, but my father, many of the Europeans, many of the Europeans felt that the kids should have some English name, or else, they'll be persecuted. So even though I always asked, like I think Weinberger gave it away anyway, but there was this idea. Even though my father, they never used my English name, but in the English classes in school, they did, and Davke, it wasn't. It's not even a, like my parents. My mother might think like heard it on television or something. She didn't. It's not even like it's good. We never use it. But it's just something that my mother really didn't in the beginning understand too much English, and I think she just liked the way it sounded or something. So the question of secular of secular names as opposed to Hebrew names would obviously mean we'd have to go into a long discussion of the nature of Lashon HaKodesh, of what Hebrew, of what Hebrew actually means, and the power of Lashon HaKodesh, of Hebrew. Shavuos, a few years ago, I spent the entire night talking about Lashon HaKodesh, about Hebrew, and the holiness of the Hebrew letters. Obviously, there are no tapes of the Fanat, but the Malachim, you have to understand, the Malachim don't speak any other language. Angels don't understand any other language, they only understand Hebrew. Therefore, Rabbeinu Bechayai, one of the Rishonim, says in his commentary on Bereishis that the Malachim are very much involved in helping our tefillos get through, helping our davening, pushing our davening through. Malachim are very helpful. So, for instance, Rabbeinu Bechayai says that if a person davenes in a different language, the Malachim don't understand, and they say, you know, we'd like to help you, but we don't know what you're talking about. We don't know what you're saying. The Malachim can't help. Now, that doesn't mean that davening in English doesn't work. Of course it does. And Hashem understands any language. And we could turn to Hashem. We don't need the Malachim. Nevertheless, just to give you an idea of how important the Hebrew name is, the Balei HaTosfos said something else. Listen to this. The Balei HaTosfos, I was going to photostat this and I forgot. Maybe that's next time. In the fifth parak of Bereishis, the Balei HaTosfos wrote that the name of a Jew is itself a tefillah. That means every single time you call your name, Yankele, Sarala, that's not just like saying, hey Bob. When you say Yankele or Sarala, we say Yaakov Asara. That is itself a prayer that the child should be like Yaakov Avinu, and that should have all the kaiches that are in those letters, the letters of his name. It's mamish a tefillah, the Tosafot said. It's davening. It's not just naming. It's a tefillah. And therefore the tzaddikim would repeat over and over someone's name when the person needed a Yeshua, to say the name. To call a child by the name, Tosfos is saying, is davening every time you call a child by the name. In the most mundane context, come for breakfast, brush your teeth, you have to go to school. Every single time you say the name, the Tosfos says it's mamish a tefillah for that child, that the child should have the kaiches of Rachel Imenu and all of the brachas that are contained in that amazing name that's composed of those three letters. Therefore, that only works, obviously, that only works when the name, when you refer to the child by his Hebrew name. And therefore you also know that Chazal have taught that we were redeemed from Egypt because the Jews did not change their Hebrew names. The Medrash says, Lo shinu es shmon. They didn't change their names. Reuven v'Shimon nachtin, Reuven v'Shimon salkin. When they went down to Mitzrayim, they were Reuven and Shimon. And even though it was a crazy, crazy time that we spent there, the 210 years were crazy. But the Medrash says, we came out Reuven and Shimon. We went in Reuven and Shimon, and we came out Reuven and Shimon. Reuven v'Shimon Salkin. L'hayu karin l'Yehuda Reifei v'le'le Reuven l'Liani. We didn't change the names from the Hebrew to Egyptian names, but we continued to call them by their Hebrew names. Therefore, the Maharsham, the Brzhanerov, says a frightening thing, and we'll end on this cheerful note. The Brzhanerov, who was one of the greatest poskim of our great-grandfather's generation in Poland, you heard of Reb Shalom Shvadron probably, his grandfather was the Maharsham. The Maharsham, the Brzhanerov, said that any Jew who calls himself or his child by a non-Jewish name is in effect prolonging the length of our exile and delaying the coming of Mashiach. The Brzhanerov says it is delaying the arrival of Mashiach. Since we know that redemption depended upon, as Chazal say clearly, maintaining our Jewish names, if the Jewish names are not maintained, it doesn't mean you have to call every single time, but if the Jewish names are neglected or ignored, or changed, God forbid, the Maharsham said that brings, God forbid, a delay in the coming of redemption in general for the Jewish people, and that individual's personal redemption when it comes to parnasa, or when it comes to getting a shidduch, or all good things, redemption is on hold, because using a Jewish name awakens all the redemptive energy in the universe. Using a secular name distances the person, God forbid, from his or her personal redemption and the redemption of the Jewish people. So we're going to talk about next time, which is not next week, but the next year we have, the fact that we see that in the Gemara there are many people who have non-Jewish names, right? Antoninus, Agrippus, Munbaz, and so on. There are many, Alexander, right? There are many non-Jewish names, how this all works out. And then we're going to get into, we're going to discuss more the inyan of using secular names and the naming after an event that took place in a person's life and the time that the event took place, how this all plays into davening for, God forbid, for a sick person, Misha Berachs, all of these halachas, anything that has to do with naming. So, Bez Hashem, we'll continue next time.